My name is Todd Bergeson, and I have Sheila and Brandon with me. Introduce themselves in a few minutes. But first of all, just wanted to go over a couple of points here. First of all, I'm not sure if you realize it, but procurement spending globally from public sector organizations amount to about $9.5 trillion. And if you look on an average within organizations, procurement amounts to about a third of your overall spending. So that lends a lot of opportunities for improvements to, you know, improve the budgets and open up resources and things that you can do just by focusing on procurement itself. But there are a few issues and things you have to overcome when you're looking at procurement. And first of all, do you have an overall overview of what is happening within procurement? And then there's certain objectives that your organization is trying to meet, and a lot of times that is through procurement spending. Maybe political objectives, things like that, that kind of constrain what you're trying to do in procurement. And then there's always the laws that you have to face that make it very cumbersome and things that you have to do when you're looking at procurement. But I think, first of all, if you're looking to improve it, naturally you have to have the aspiration or the willingness to change. And then I said earlier, the overview makes it difficult, but if you are able to get that overview of your procurement, you can really take control of that and really manage that procurement. Now, from a transparency standpoint, I just kind of wanted to focus on a couple of things here, and I guess my slide doesn't build. But first of all was simple transparency. And again, there you want to make sure that everyone understands the bidding process. They make sure they understand the audit process. Everything is very open that you do provide those that give that transparency. And then second of all, you want to make sure that it's open bidding, that you provide that open competitive bidding, provide that platform so everyone understands that. And finally, e-procurement really, through the use of technology, done correctly, can really help improve what you're looking at and what you're doing to manage that process. And then also, more importantly, I think that can also help to kind of eliminate intervention, so to speak. If you have the right controls on, utilizing that technology can really improve that procurement process. So again, just kind of some opening thoughts, and I'd like to turn it over now to Sheila and Brandon, who will take you through and...
Hi, it works. I'm Sheila Itriaga-Collier. I'm a senior PM on the Customer Implementation Readiness team. It's the team where we focus on looking at the product, how customers would look at it before it gets released. I primarily have a public sector focus. I come from using the product at the City of Redmond for about 5 years.
My name is Brandon Potter. My name is Brandon Potter. I'm a senior program manager on the R&D team responsible for the overall development of public sector specific features across the product.
Hang on.
Did everybody hear me? Okay.
One more time.
So, they got it. All right.
Did you hear him?
They all nodded yes.
They all nodded yes. Perfect. Okay, so we're going to talk about e-procurement, the last section, the last box on Todd's slide. So, that's really important to provide the ability to have the transparency while meeting the legal requirements, whether they be state, federal, grant mandates, things like that, while still doing it efficiently, because everyone's aware every time you put a new legality or a new requirement, that puts another layer of complexity. And so trying to find that efficiently and transparently can be difficult. So within AX, in R3, there was a lot of enhancements made to the e-procurement process. And in CU8, we added some additional ones. We spoke specifically here in those that were public sector only. First is through the solicitation management. The publish and send used to be a separate button. Now it's one button. You can hit one button, publish and send it, and it's done. We'll go through the process on if you don't want to publish it through the demo. The other one is to have the ability to invite vendors. Throw a narrow cast, limit the vendors that can bid on it. That seems a little counterintuitive to what Todd was saying about having an open bid process, but there are times where there's specific requirements or qualifications that the vendors have. So you may have already had a request for qualifications done, so you've got, you know, the qualifications of the vendors, that those are the only ones you want to have responding to that RFQ. The other thing on the bid scoring and evaluation, we now have the ability to limit and control what the vendors see on the portal upon closing. So if you want them only to see who won, who it was awarded to, you can limit it to that, or you can expand it to showing them everything, the amount, the scores, any comments, things like that. With regards to the vendor registration enhancements, there was a lot of work added and enhancements done in CU8. That's one area that Brandon will be demoing, and I'll wait and let him speak a little bit more to that. And then finally, the vendor and invoice input. This is a one-time vendor setup prior to CU8. Within public sector, you could not set up a one-time vendor within accounts payable. You now have that ability to do that. You also have the ability to create an invoice at the same time. So if you have a list of juror payments that you need to make, they're all one-time vendors, or utility refunds, you can create that in an Excel file and bring it in. It creates the vendor and the invoice at the same time. Once it's in, it works as any other invoice would be, okay? So here's our demo story. I always like to have real world stories to talk about. So here we have the City of Maple. They contract with the County of Fur for all their court services, including juror payments. They were notified, City of Maple was, that it looks like there was some underpayments to jurors of about $200,000. So a potential material amount. Sarah, the CFO for Maple, talked to the mayor. The decision was made to bring in an outside audit firm to audit the payments, to get the right information on what needs to be paid, the back payments, interest, penalties, things like that. Also to do a feasibility study about bringing it back in-house. Having this kind of exposure was more than they wanted to look at, so they wanted to put out another RFQ about that. Once the audit firm that was hired completes their work, they're going to supply a list of the jurors and the payments needed, and we will bring that in and pay them directly. Okay? So that's the story. That's where we're going. Any questions? Otherwise, we'll jump into the RFQ demo. So on this demo, we're going to be doing the solicitation management, publishing the RFQ, permit, have it be narrowcast to invited members, and look at the controls on what is viewed outside. Sorry, I'm too quick. So on here, I'm going to go to the RFQ. I'm going to start a new RFQ. We're going to turn it into a purchase order. We're going to call it audit firm. It's going to be an RFQ for services. Our delivery date, we're going to modify that. And the expiration date will be in a month. Okay. Now we have the RFQ. pretty easy. The bid type is sealed. It defaults to sealed from the public sector with the public sector key on. The invitation only, if you want this to be an invite only, you check that box. Pretty easy interface there. And then the results view. What the results view is this is the view you want on the portal once it is closed and awarded, okay? So we're gonna set that up. So you can add a new one. Have the name, the description, and then down here is a list of everything that can be shown on the public portal. In this case, we're saying we just want total scores, so you would uncheck everything else. Okay? For this RFP, we're going to do the award and the comment. Okay? We're going to add category type. And it's a generalized amount based. And we've estimated it's going to be, it should be around 25,000 is what our expectation is. Okay? Now we're going to go down at vendors. Now you can have, if you have an invite only, you need to have vendors invited. If you have it open, you can still invite vendors. It's just not limiting who can bid on it to those that you've invited. So we know Accounting for All was a vendor that is approved to do the work, has the requirements met. Excuse me. So now we've got the RFQ ready. We can go ahead and do the send and publish. So in R3, the send and publish here, there were two buttons, one that said send, one that said process. Now there's the one. When you click on that, you'll see up here there's two checkboxes. If you just want to send it, you can uncheck the publish or vice versa, okay? One thing to know, when you publish the first time, so if the first RFQ or the first time you take action on processing that RFQ, if it includes publishing, any subsequent changes, whether that's inviting additional vendors or if that's doing an amendment to it, will require publish. So when you go back in to do it a second time, the publish button will be grayed out. That's a note to, so everyone's aware that if they publish it the first time and then wait a second, it's a control. You wouldn't want it published the first time, make an amendment, and not publish it so everyone's aware that there's an additional or an updated amendment. Okay? On the form, you'll see the vendor that you entered, as well as any lines. So this is a place that you can check before you actually publish it to make sure you've got everything in there that you wanted on the RFQ, as well as you've got all your vendors that you wanted to invite. You get the info log that says that it was published to the vendor portal and that it was sent to the vendors. So we've got a confirmation. I'm going to bounce into a vendor portal, do a refresh, and you'll see here when we did the open request, it's got the audit firm, which was our document title, but it's showing sealed and bidding only, invite only. So anyone that would look at that and they would see, a vendor would see that, they would know that they could not take action on that. They had to be invited. Okay? Close that one. Okay. So now we're going to go into the vendor. Okay? Excuse me. So we're going to look in the documents. And we see the audit firm. He looks at that, opens it up. Once he reviews this, there's a decision that, yes, I do want to bid on it. Simply hit bid. None of this was modified from NCU8. It was the same as previously. We want the quantity of one each. But this vendor says we can do it for $20,000. And they can leave a comment if they want. We're going to save that. And we're going to submit it. So it's been submitted. We look at the documents page for that vendor, and it shows that it has been submitted, no action needed. So now that vendor can track the status of that from their portal. Okay? So now we go back and we fast forward in time. And we have a pre-baked RFQ that's already expired, and the vendors have bid on it. So from the RFQ, when you look in the vendor area, you can see where you've got the request for quotation, that they've replied to it. So when you try to open the reply, you'll get this message that this bid is sealed. So there is actually a process that you have to go in to unseal any bids that were sealed. You can't get around that by just looking, trying to get to the reply directly. So I'll go back to the RFQ itself. And under replies, we're going to unseal. You'll get this notice. Once this is unsealed, it can't be resealed. Okay? Again, a control item. Do you understand what I'm trying to say with that one? Because there's sometimes confusion that, oh, I just want to look at this and then I want to seal it again. That can't be done. Okay? So it's now unsealed. And I can see the actual bid that was made. Sorry, I guess they were more expensive when I pre-baked this one. I apologize for the numbers being different. At this point, you can go in and do an edit and do the scoring of what you want that bid based on whatever criteria you have. So this one now has a score of 90. And this one scored 50s. So it's updated the lines on the RFQ for that vendor, so you can see those directly there. You can make that decision. There's the other option of looking at the request for quotation lines. And you always love it in a demo when it doesn't work, right? Not quite sure what's happening here. What you should see are these lines. Under process, it says return, accept, or reject. So you make that decision at that point in time. You would reject the ones that you're not awarding it to, and then you would hit accept for the ones that do I have. I know. Yeah, but I bid on them. So they were received. It's not updating. So, you always love, like I said, you always love demos, especially one like this where if I opened it, I can't reseal it to actually test it to make sure it worked. But there were several down here that I tested just before coming in the room that worked just fine. So let's say on validate 2, here, it's showing accepted, okay? So from there, we can navigate to the portal for that vendor. You can see on validate 2 that it shows accepted in his request. And when we look at the closed, we've got the awarded and the score. The other thing to note, when you award it, it automatically creates the purchase order. Puts that into the purchase order queue, and you would process it as if you've created the purchase order directly or created the purchase order from a purchase rec. And the other really cool thing, when you hit accept, it brings it up, notifies that this has been accepted and this PO has been created. You can click on that PO and not navigate directly to that specific PO in the system. And now it's in the system. Purchase order is ready to go through workflow based on the data that we have set up. Depending on how you set up the system, it'll go down that same process. Okay? So hopefully Brandon's session, demo, won't have those kinks.
We hope.
Yeah. Correct, in the setup.
Can it only publish or send emails? Can it send emails?
Yes, so if you've got it set up, an email for the vendors, it will set it up.
Okay.
And Brandon will touch on that a little bit. Am I screaming? I'm sorry.
I just didn't mean to steal this.
Actually, I touched on it yesterday. I don't, so.
So there we go. Sorry, a little confusion. And the accountant can't tell the difference between 7 and 8. Okay. So now we're going to set up real quickly an RFQ for the feasibility. We're going to go through the same process. And the one thing to note on this one, we're going to make it sealed, but we are not going to make it invite only. Okay? This is going to be open, so anyone that's has access, goes out to the vendor portal, can open this up and bid on it. Okay? So we're getting the notification if you are including any vendors, that or it's saying you haven't. I haven't included any vendors. And it's been published. So I couldn't send it because there wasn't anyone to send it to, but I published it. Okay? Now it's all you.
That is me. Okay. So now what I'm going to be going over is the...
keep going.
Is the new vendor search capability. Sorry about that. So with the vendor search, what this means is in the e-procurement, vendors now have been built the ability to do self-service management. Who was in the session yesterday? We did a procurement session yesterday. You're going to need a little tiny piece of that. If you remember, there was some things that we shown that were public sector specific. One of those is that vendors can now self-manage their own users to access their account and manage the bidding process within that. And that's a feature that's really kind of specific to public sector because we have this search capability where they can search your list of vendors to associate themselves to. They're able to use their own login credentials. They don't have to be in your Active Directory. They can log in with their Microsoft account, their Facebook account, whatever that. It uses that specialized functionality now. I covered that in great depth yesterday and probably put many people to sleep in that stuff yesterday. So I do encourage you to go back in the recordings and watch that if you want to understand the real true power in that. I will be touching on just a brief bit of that in this session. But that's this first block here that I've got there, and that's the ability of signing up a contact person and then self-managing that person. The second piece that I'll be touching on after that is I'll kind of jump back to our scenario where Sheila was at, where our audit firm has now come back with the results, and we're now ready to pay those vendors. So I'll show you the one-time vendor import, as well as the ability to do a quick single one-time vendor in the client. So what you see is we're looking at our public vendor portal. So this is where anybody in your constituents, anybody can come in and see all of the RFQs that you've got, all of your past purchases and everything. But we also have a link over to the left to sign up under the registration area. When we go to the sign up, it's going to prompt me and let me know that I'm being passed over to our Azure credential system to be able to authenticate, and that's how we integrate with that Microsoft account, Facebook account, whatever it is, so that they manage their own credentials. Once I accept that, I click which service I'm going to be authenticating with. In this case, I'm going to use the Microsoft account. And everybody have a Microsoft account, right? So you guys are familiar with screens like this and seeing this. So this is me as a user at the vendor that's just going to come in using my own personal account to create my own vendor account. Once I log in, it's now coming back into AX, and now we're seeing a secured version of the portal that's going to allow me to search my vendor list. And this is the area that I'm talking about over on the left. That's specific to public sector so that your vendors can manage themselves and add users themselves. So in this case, I'm going to be adding a user to our audit. So I search, you can do partial name search. Any vendor that came up that had the word audit in their name would show up in this list. You see there's additional fields over to the left, the contact information about that vendor. So if you have multiple vendors that may be similar, they can see that information and validate that they're, make sure that they're selecting the right vendor. I'm going to go ahead and select that. Use the selected company. I see all their information. I can bring it straight into my profile. So the information that you see on the right is about me as a user working for Audit International. Oops. And I'll click finish, and I'm just letting you know, thanks, your application's been received. Now it can go through a review process to become a vendor. So there's what at this point, it's actually entered into, it's come into the system, and because vendors can self-manage themselves, if I come back in, now I'm going to kind of switch hats. I'm still the vendor, but now I'm actually the portal administrator at that vendor. So I'm the person that's been given the special security in our system to be able to manage the vendors for their organization. I'm going to log back into that site. This person's already been pre-authorized and pre-set up. They're just adding, maybe say they have a new employee that they're adding to the system in this case. So from now on, anytime anybody uses it, they use their Microsoft account credentials to get in. So here, if she comes to her unconfirmed vendor contact list, she'll see that John Johnson is now in there. Somebody's come in named John Johnson. Who is that? They do their validation, making sure that it's really the person that they need to do. They can go ahead and select that person and create them as a true contact on their vendor account. They can complete any additional profile information about that individual, fill in the rest of their contact information, anything that you wanted to put, the standard person information, and save that. At this point, they can come into the contacts, and now we'll see that John is actually a true contact for Audit International. We love the spinning wheels. You guys never see that, right, though, anywhere? Never? Yeah, I didn't think so. Okay, so John's in there as a contact, but he is just the contact. Now we can go ahead and make him a real user and create a user account in AX for John. So we'll select him, and add the vendor user request. And here I could actually make John, if I wanted to, I can make them another portal administrator, so they have the full rights to be able to manage users, or I can just make him a regular user, which lets them manage bids and RFQs. We'll just give them the regular user rights. And now we'll go ahead and submit that through workflow. So this user request, a lot of the capability that was added in R3 and enhanced in CU8 is what's enabling us to do this, because there were new workflow elements that can auto-create the vendors for this using that all of those special, the new credential capabilities through Azure. So if I come to user requests, what I see at this point is that it's authentication pending. So an email has now been generated out to John for him to log in one more time for us to capture his credentials so that we can truly store those this time so that we really know John is who he says he is. So we're going to log off of the portal administrator, and I'm going to log back on as John. This time I'm just going to his email account because that's where the email should be. I guess it thinks it's junk. I don't know why. But wait, it's safe. So this is the email that they get, just saying, please go in and authenticate yourself. All they have to do is simply click the link. And since he's already logged into his Outlook account for his email, it passes those credentials, and it immediately just says, thank you for authenticated. Now your final request has been approved. So depending on how you configure your workflow, you can still have one last layer of security where you, as the city, the county, whoever, can have true final approval of letting somebody have access to your system. Or you can have workflow just auto-approve this last step. We're going to go ahead and actually approve that in the client. See, here's John pending approval. And I'm going to approve that. You see this kind of crazy user alias in here? That's the special key, so that the Microsoft account up there has passed this down. It's just some special encrypted key so that we know who that person is, that the systems can talk together. And now that that's happened, he gets a second email saying you've successfully been set up as a user. Now from this point forward, he'll be able to log into an account as the vendor, respond, review RFQs, bid on them, and so forth, so he can do everything that they can through the portal. So that's the new capability. It was just really, I was just kind of showing that to show you that vendor search capability, how somebody can do that end-to-end. Depending on how your workflow, it's completely hands-off for you in managing those users of your vendors. Switching back and forth here. So now switching gears, I'm back to our scenario that Sheila had left off. The audit firm has returned the results. We validated and we agree that these are the true payments we need to pay out for those missed juror payments. So I'm going to go through the one-time vendor capability, which is completely new with CU8. So when we come into accounts payable over here, under the periodic area, you see there's a new group for one-time vendors. So we can import them and process them and get those. That'll automatically create a vendor account for them and create an invoice for you in one process. The first thing I want to show you before we do this is how we configure this and how we can actually build this, set it up to do this. So in order to set it up, the first thing you do is you do have to create one vendor in the system. It's not a real vendor, but think of it as a template that'll be used. So when we create these other vendors, it'll pattern it off of that vendor. So we do have one created already in the system here. Nothing special. Anything you want on the vendor, terms, group, all of that information is just going to be on this vendor. So nothing special. I just want, you got to create the vendor. Then what you need to do is in the accounts payable parameters, under vendor, there is this field right here where you tell the system, this is my template vendor. So I would have selected that new vendor that I created. Now from any this going forward, any one-time vendor that I create will automatically use this vendor as its template to pattern that on. So this is just the Excel spreadsheet. Remember, our thing was $200,000. I'm just doing a simple one here just to kind of show you the process here. But this is the spreadsheet that you would have. The process takes in an Excel spreadsheet. There is a page on TechNet that shows that explains exactly the format this has to be. You have to have the columns in this order to build the template for the data that you're going to import. It's very flat, very simple. But as you look through it, it's pretty basic information. You know, are they a person or an organization? It's the same things you typically see when you're creating a vendor manually. Further to that, to the right, you see the details of the invoice. The invoice number, a description of it, the dates, et cetera, units, and then your ledger account that's going to post to. So all of the very basic stuff that you need to import this data to. I want to point out, just for the point of demo, I do have two versions of this spreadsheet. Here I have one called bad. So I've purposely made errors in this spreadsheet so that you can see what happens when I try to import it, and I know I've got bad data. What you see in this case here, I've removed the ledger account from everything, so obviously I don't want to import those if something fails. So I'm going to first try importing the bad ones. So in accounts payable, in periodic, under one-time vendor, I just click import, browse out to that file. And here you'd pick the account structure that you're importing this in against so it knows what that ledger account, and click OK. As it's importing these, it's doing the validation, checking things, making sure things are going to be okay. If it detects any errors, it's going to immediately pull a report up and explain what those errors are. Sure enough, there's errors. If it goes smoothly, you won't see this report at all. It'll just say successfully imported and give you some summary information of what was imported. So once this report comes up, it's pretty basic. It's just a summary of the details of what was missing in this account or in this import.
While we're waiting for the report to come up, one of the things to note on this import and how we came up with the Excel file to be the methodology of bringing it in and have it being a very flat file, the intent was you would be pulling that information out from another system. If it's your JIR control system, if it's your water utility system and you're doing refunds, something like that. So it was the expectation was you're getting that information out from a different system to pull in to actually just cut the check.
Okay, so our report finally came up. And sure enough, you see every line, there's just a summary of exactly what happened and why it erred on bringing that in. So once we do bring them in, we'll go ahead and try this again, and this time we'll select our good file. And just quickly just says you've successfully imported that. Now at this point, I can go over to my vendors, I can go into my invoices, and I still won't see anything. We now need to actually process these. They've been brought into the system strictly to a staging area. Now I need to process them. And the reason it's a separate process is because you actually have an option in here. Do you want, if it detects a duplicate, so let's say that we have a vendor in there that's already received a one-time payment other time in the system, do you want it to go ahead and create a new one for them and go ahead and pay them, or do you want to just prevent it from paying? There are situations where you would just, I never want to pay this person again, so it's going to skip that person in the file. So I would say, do you want to go ahead and process them, or do you want to just, if you say no, it'll skip everybody that is already in the system as a one-time vendor. I'm going to leave it on yes. Go ahead and run it. So at this point, it's actually going through and creating those vendor accounts and creating the invoices for those vendors. It's going to come up and give me a summary of how many duplicates it processed, how many vendors it created, and how many invoices were created once it's done. So the process we're going through is for those bulk processes. And I don't know if Sheila touched on it when she was back on the scenario. We said that we had the bulk of them that we were going to approve, but there were still a couple of stragglers that needed some final validation and research. So once this is imported and I show you how we did the bulk import, I'm going to turn around and then show you how to do just a single, how we've kind of turned it into a somewhat of a wizard style so that you can quickly just create that one-time vendor process. So sure enough, come up, we've created the seven vendors, the seven invoices, and we're good to go. If I come over to my pending invoice list page, I'll see all of them in here. And from this point forward, they're just like any other invoice in the system. You'd pay that from there, so nothing special about that. So now we've the last one that was the straggler that I mentioned, we're ready. We validated it. We're good to go. We're going to go ahead and enter that one. There's a new button up here for one-time vendor and invoice. Here I'm on the invoice list page. I'll go ahead and click that, and I get this form where I can fill in some basic information about that vendor. I'm just going to keep it simple. Go ahead and create this. That creates it. It's going through. It's creating the vendor, and now it immediately opens up the invoice form with that vendor so that I can do it. So it's just kind of a quick way into that, rather than having to go to your vendors, create the vendor, come over to the invoice, and create the invoice. And from here, it's just creating an invoice, just like anything else. So I would. He's getting a generous payment. We'll just go with that. So, and from that point, it's just anything you do with the invoice, you'd finalize, post that, push it through workflow, whatever you needed to do. So, leave it at that. So as you can see, throughout CU8, I think my slides were just in the wrong order. I kind of talked to them all, so I'll just jump ahead and I apologize. So with that, we've added a number of features between what I do encourage you, if you missed the session yesterday, to go back and watch that to see more about the Azure capability and the ability for them to self-manage their users in the e-procurement area. We've added these features to show you. So hopefully what you see is good and that you'll be able to take that back and use it in your organizations. With that, we can go ahead and have a question and answer. Yeah.
I didn't notice when you pulled that up, when it does the one-time vendor, is it actually creating vendor records for those?
So the question is, when I'm going through the one-time vendor, is it actually creating vendor records? Yes, it's creating true, real vendor records out there. It does have a separate numbering sequence, so you can set those up, but it's using that template vendor for the rest of the information as it's creating those. And they're flagged as one-time. There is an indicator on them.
Yeah, you can purge exactly how you would do a purging of any of your other invoices, yeah. There was some talk about when we created that feature to include a separate purging just for that, but the decision was made not to, since there's already that feature available within AX as a whole. And I'm trying to create another one and have it expire so I can show you how it really works. It's always an exercise in making sure it closes soon enough that you're not waiting forever, but long enough that you can actually do a bid on it. So I have a couple more minutes.
Yeah.
Is there any other questions? Yeah. Now, we didn't talk about the amendment. We talked about that at length yesterday, but there is additional feature within CU8 that has more version control, not true version control, but more control when you do make an amendment. So when you create an amendment, you send and publish it, it will overwrite the prior amendment on the portals. It will send an email, separate email, with the update to any vendors that are on it being to be invited. But it keeps both versions within journals within the system. No questions?
You guys look sleepy. It's only Tuesday. Is that it? All right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's just like any other invoice in this. Once you import, it's just like any other invoice in the system. So through your bank module, you can do all of the voiding. You can handle. It's all the same. So. we wait long. Yeah, go ahead. It should. I can't promise that. It's not a scenario that I don't know that we've tested. The virtual sharing is one of those areas where it's always kind of used carefully. But it should, just like anything else. It's going to import for this company. The invoice will be the company that you're importing into. But if your vendor shared, it's just the vendor. So it should technically work. I would definitely test that before obviously trying it in production.
So here's a RFQ reply that came through. And you notice the buttons are now active. Yay! It does work. On this, made the decision, this one I'm going to accept. Simply click the accept button. It gives you the details one more time that you can check it. Hit OK. And it's taking time here because it's clearing it off and opening the PO. So as I said, it's got the purchase order. And you can navigate directly to that PO and look at it and make whatever business process you have in place at that point in time. If you have a workflow on it, if you need to do anything else, you've got it right there. So it does work. It was user error. No matter how much you try to dress rehearse these demos,
something happens.
It can be like a pestilent child. Yeah. I'm not going to work today.
So we do have a little more time. If you do have other questions, we can go ahead and hang around. If you don't want to raise your hand and ask your question, there are several sessions relating to public sector. Most of them have already passed, but they are here. Again, I encourage you to go out and pull down the recordings if you miss these sessions. And listen to that. One other note that they've asked us to kind of just let everybody know, there is a really nice session with going on next in the auditorium about cloud first, mobile first world. They've just asked all of everybody in this block of time to really promote that session next. So if that interests you, if it doesn't, go take a nap. All right, and with that, we thank you for coming. Please send your surveys. We want to make sure that we can get the money to the dancers. Every one of those, we get that. If you were at the, where there's the fundraiser for every survey that's turned in, Microsoft donates $1 to a local arts charity here in the area. So fill out your surveys. And thanks again.